For July the 12th, 2019, we talk about Grim Dawn, City of Heroes fan servers, and we ask you which games you most associate with summertime. Welcome to Level 291. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Worked out to where we had a three style this time.
Yeah.
Oh.
When was the last time we had this combination, Cole?
This particular combination? I don't have I don't have the spreadsheet up, and I don't know.
Say, let us all don our three style hats.
Yes. Weirdly, they're not tricorns.
Yeah.
They
damn
are.
It.
Yeah.
They're just baseball caps. Pie.
But yeah. Yeah. So
it's baseball caps that say my other cap is a tricorner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're here just in the very beating heart of summer. I got to tell you guys, I'm really excited because after weeks and weeks, I managed to get somebody who was going to buy something from Craigslist to show up at my house and take it.
Oh, good.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they did not axe murder you. This is not the ghost of Cole.
No, this is not the ghost. I mean, it is the ghost of Cole, but still connected to Cole's corpse.
The ghost of Cole present.
Yes.
And you did not axe murder them either, right?
No. I'd been trying to sell a couch. Because I had one too many couches in my house.
And the couch is not made of axes, correct?
Right. And it's also not made of bodies, not stuffed with bodies. There's some dander. I vacuumed it and I kept it clean for when people came by.
No, you said it did not have bodies in it?
Yet. Oh, no, it did not have any bodies, but I don't know if anybody who's ever tried to sell something on Craigslist will tell you, you just get no shows and you get people who will like say, oh my gosh, you know, they'll tell you their life story. Like I was just divorced and I need this, blah, blah, blah. Like, okay. Yeah, no, it's fine. Nobody else wants it. Come and get it. And then nothing. And then finally they came and bought the goddamn couch. So.
Had that check marked down.
What?
selling the couch.
Yes.
Was that a bucket list item?
No, I'd just been annoyed because I had my living room was full. Living room full up.
Sorry, I guess that reveals that in my head canon, Cole, you had a to-do list. And like some form of like half couch picked up was on there, and your frustration was not the fact that this person had stood you up. It's the fact that there was a box untipped.
No. My frustration was just in, you know, just being assailed with no shows. Yep. No, I wouldn't. I didn't write down, get rid of the couch, cause I was tripping over the damn thing, sticking out in the middle of a ding dang walkway like that. Mm-hmm. No. So it's gone now. It's gone. That's my story.
what other like homeowner to do's do you have left?
I need to mow. It's been a while since I've mowed.
That's never gonna leave the to do list.
No, it's not. It's a recurring thing. But you mow when your grass is ready. You don't mow like on a fixed schedule. If you're doing it yourself, you know, if you're paying somebody else, they show up when they show up. But no, you know, you want to make sure it, you don't want to keep it too short for too long or else it dies. And I've already got enough patchy grass and drainage problems as it is. My concern is, and now we're in full on boring territory. I'm so sorry, everybody.
I am interested.
No, my concern is the battery of my lawnmower, it crapped out last time. I charged it up, but I'm just terrified. I'm going to go out to my shed and try and start it up and then nothing. It's just going to be, you know, it's not going to turn over, and then I'm going to go spend $40 on a lawnmower battery, and that's really, it's not a tragic story, it's just annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
that's a good summary for adulthood, maybe. <I
don't know. laughs> It's not tragic, but it's annoying.
Yeah. Oh man.
So that's what's going on with me. How about y'all, Dennis? You took a trip.
I vacationed, yes.
Yeah.
up to Michigan. And whenever I said that, anyone I was talking to invariably said, "Oh, where in Michigan?"
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, Traverse City, near.
Did you hold up your hands and then point to the?
I did. What I've taken to doing is holding up your hand and saying, "Okay, you know how Michigan is shaped like that?" And uh-huh. They go, "Yeah." And I go, "That's where I'm going." Yeah. Okay. But I would say, "Oh, just outside of Traverse City." "Oh, where?" It's like, geez, why? When did everyone become a Michigan expert?
Are these like coworkers?
Coworkers, friends, random people on the street assailing me about my vacation? Like, it's just, I don't know.
Couch
it's
buyers.
Just couch buyers. But yeah, everyone knows Traverse City area very, yeah. very intimately. So I was on Spider Lake, actually technically between Spider Lake and Bass Lake. About 20 minutes south of Traverse City. There, yeah. You filthy animals. It's as detailed as I can get.
So there's a necessary piece of context, which is for anybody who is not from the Midwest or is particularly not familiar with college sports, but there is a generally a rivalry between Ohio and Michigan that stems from or is related to a football and basketball rivalry between kind of our main state universities. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely felt up here. Like if you have a Michigan flag hanging out at certain times of the year, you get your house egged, you know?
Then you get axe murdered.
Wow.
No, you just get your house egged. I don't think you get axe murdered.
I really want an axe murder now. Anyone else hankering for an axe murder?
It's been a while.
We built it up so much.
Can we just have a group viewing of "So I Married an Axe Murderer"?
Close enough, okay. For now. That'll sate the bloodlust yeah. this time. Wait.
I don't think anybody gets murdered on screen with an axe in "So I Married an Axe Murderer."
See, that's a thing. Somebody gets chased with an axe. So we call that edging.
I'm hankering for an axe murder, but I'm also very squeamish. So if I could just have an implied axe murder.
Yes. Yeah. No, but I don't want to ask because you two grew up. I never ran into this in Cincinnati. Like if you said Michigan, like is there like those bastards, you know, I'd rather die in Ohio than live in Michigan or.
Yeah, it's your proximity to like high school determines how much.
Gotcha.
I feel like generally by the time people are in college, it's more of a jovial thing.
Yeah.
It depends if you go to OSU or not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing is when you enter, everyone in high school and in grade school wants to go to OSU. And then right. in college, you're going wherever you're going. And if that's not OSU, you stop caring as much.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I just say, yeah. you know,
and then
I grew up in a split family in many ways, but you know, just certain people liked OSU, certain people liked Michigan. It just kind of came from a, you know, and. Being that I'm from Northern Ohio, I have no sports teams to ever get excited about. So it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Although apparently the animosity does not extend to vacationing, at least Cincinnati to Michigan.
Right.
As I was describing, everyone in Cincinnati was familiar with vacation areas in Michigan.
Yeah. It's a pretty state. Pretty lakes.
Yeah. It was beautiful. We spent lots of time outside on the water. Hiking, doing all sorts of stuff. And I will talk about it a bit later, but I really leaned into the whole like tabletop board game design type of thing. So it was a fun thing that happened there as well that I'll talk about.
Neat. Boys have fun?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, what we discovered is that they didn't need to go to Michigan to have fun. They just needed a bucket and some water squirters. and that literally, we have not reached the end point of them being done with it.
Nice.
They will play as long as you supply them with water.
That is amazing.
Yeah. We brought the most important part of Michigan back with us.
Nice. Ben, you took a trip too.
I did. Since Dennis was gone, it was safe for me to go back to Cincinnati. So I spent the weekend there. I met up with some old friends. One of my friends from elementary school just had a baby, so I got to see the baby. I got to like hold the baby. I didn't change the baby, but you know, did everything else.
Full forward.
And then in Cincinnati they have a parade for 4th of July. That's a lot of fun in Northside. So I got to experience that, and that was cool.
Nice. That's cool. What else have you been up to, or is that all?
That was the main thing. That took up like 4 days of the last week. I had a lot of jet lag. I did a red eye out and then like a 6 a.m. flight back. So that was a new and terrible experience that I don't want to repeat.
Yeah, I think you got like the worst side of both of those, actually.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, well. Yeah. Well, that feels like banter to me. I'm hoping we can leave behind the axe murdering, but who knows? Who knows as we go forward
we might have an axe mantra for the show.
Into the
Deus Ax Machina.
Can't be a title. No, as we go into the usual kind of show with the grind, talking about things we've been playing, asking our listeners a question here, and then talking about things that are exciting. Why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, you've been away the longest, so I'm going to go to you first. What you been playing?
Yeah, I have. So on the video game realm, because I was out on vacation, there's not a ton to add. However, I did re-download Puzzle Quest 2 on my phone before we headed out. And that game is phenomenal.
It's been forever since I thought about these. That still runs?
Yeah.
That still runs?
It still runs, yeah, for iPhone XS. Mm-hmm. It's there. Came right on down. The screen size is slightly cropped on either side, so I don't think it's gotten like an official upscaling, but certainly it's playing just fine. And for anyone not familiar, this is a match-3/RPG game. So you play a character that has spells, depending on what it is. The spells are very different, but the spells are all powered by mana, which you get by doing Connect 3. And each color of mana corresponds to one of the tokens in the match 3 game. And you go back and forth, taking turns against your opponent, matching gems. And then when you have enough mana, you can cast a spell to do damage or protect yourself. And in addition to mana on the match 3 board, there are skulls, which just directly do damage. And like action points, whatever you want to call them, that power up weapons that have powerful effects.
Nice. What happens when you string together a combo? Is that just the way that you get multiple individual attacks during a command or a turn?
And it's interesting. It is harder than usual to queue up a combo because anything that you queue up like immediately, your opponent will always take a match 4 or better. From you. So you kind of need them to set something up for you, or I haven't quite figured out how to kind of multi-turn plan. You kind of take what you're given. If you get a match 4, you get an additional turn. So you can chain match 4s until there aren't any left on the board. If you get a match 5 or like a corner line, I don't know how to describe it, 3 up and 2 over, or 3 over, 2 down, whatever you want to describe it as, that gives you a multiplier gem, which can be matched to any color and has some multiplying effect on the amount of mana you get from that match. So that's kind of the basic of it. If you get a bunch of cascading chains together, it will also add multipliers, even if there wasn't a match 4 or 5 in there, and it will give you an extra turn.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, there's a ton of different effects. Most of the spells will have an effect on both your opponent and the board. Right now I'm playing an assassin, and the assassin's class kind of builds up to a disarm spell, which then doubles the damage of all strikes over the next couple of turns. And then a strike turns all gems of a certain color purple, which is one of the colors on the board, and then deals damage to the enemy for every gem turned purple. The thing is, if you plan your disarm and your strikes in the right order, you can make sure that turning gems purple will create a match 4, giving you extra turns. Mm-hmm. And since you just line up a bunch of purple on the first strike, it is easier to get match 4s of purple on the second and third strikes. So yeah. It's kind of a really efficient, you're not really doing much. You're just building up your mana, kind of looking for opportunities on the board. And when you see an opening, you go for it, which is very assassin like it plays into the fantasy of the character very well.
Yeah.
My one complaint about the game is that it is incredibly slow. So one battle against even a relatively low level opponent can be a 10-minute match 3 game. And like, it shouldn't feel like a problem because, you know, I play match 3 games in excess of 10 minutes at a time all the time.
Yeah.
Like that's been proven that people will do that. But if you play that long and then at the end of it, you've just defeated one person and you're not even out of the room that you started in, it feels a little weird.
Yeah. That's strange because you're Mr. XCOM, you know, 45 minute turn guy.
I have to force myself to be like, all right, just make a decision. You're not on hard mode. If you don't find that magic, you know, 600 damage combo right now, it's not going to be the end of the world.
Yeah.
You have to, that's kind of what made me fall away from the game the first time I played it. I didn't finish it the first time I played it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been mindful about keeping the pace up this time around. And I think I am now officially further than I was the last time I played.
Yeah. So tell me about the story or the narrative. I only ever played the first one, and I remember it feeling really straight up the middle. In terms of just the presentation, I just kind of didn't seem to have an awful lot special to it. Was that just a really superficial read? Is there any kind of English that they put on it in terms of giving it some spin?
So this is definitely a sequel to the first game, which is interesting because I have no context for the plot of the first game, and they don't explain it. So, apparently there was some kind of tower. Maybe it was from the first game and there was an ancient evil locked away in the tower.
Okay.
Maybe from the first game. And there was a hero that went in and stopped the evil before, which I assume was from the first game, but they never really spell it out, which is fine. You know, you're not playing for super in-depth story. The English that I do like, however, is that the goblins, at least among the like enemy races, actually have several kind of friendly members to them. So you're kind of adventuring through the lower levels of this tower. And tower is the wrong word because it goes deep underground. So what's a reverse tower?
I've got no idea.
Whatever Bioshock 1 is, I don't know.
Yeah, right. A Bioshock. So you're doing a Bioshock. And in the I guess lower but actually upper levels of it, you're fighting these goblins. But just as likely as not, a goblin in a room is going to be like someone that'll talk to you and give you a quest. And they kind of each have their own little personalities. And you actually win some over as friends. And that's kind of, I haven't seen that. It's almost, I mean, it's not Undertale. It's not anywhere on that level.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost is reminiscent of that, even though this came before.
Right.
Like it's got shades of Undertale.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that.
Nice.
Yeah. I intentionally chose a different class from what I was playing last time. Like I said, a assassin this time. I was playing barbarian last time.
Hmm.
The barbarian was very, if I remember correctly, very focused on like skulls for damage. Like there was a bunch of things that used red mana and kind of created skulls or did things with skulls. And that, I don't know, just straight dealing damage is a lot less fun in a puzzle game than kind of setting up these intricate plays. As you would expect. that's Puzzle Quest 2. It's staying on my phone post vacation. We'll see what comes of it.
Yeah.
Were you able to play this with your kids at all, or did you just play it by yourself?
No, I was only playing by myself. However, Jen was playing Jewel Mania all vacation, which is like her perennial mobile game. And the kids were actually like understanding that. Like that's a much more straightforward match 3 game.
Mm-hmm.
And although balanced to be much more difficult because it's a free-to-play kind of find the whale game. They kind of got the idea of it. But it's a little bit simpler than what I was playing.
Nice.
Yeah. Puzzle Quest 2.
What else?
I have also been playing more City of Heroes, that kind of legacy server, which continues to be very well populated. I continue to really enjoy the roleplay supergroup that I found, essentially a guild. And it's interesting. I didn't know City of Heroes has a quest builder in it. And apparently a very advanced quest builder, where one of the guys in the group that is kind of led a lot of the story stuff put together a whole string of missions around this one thematic piece that was completely custom to our group, including custom NPCs that had custom dialogue, custom enemy mobs and everything like that, like all created from the ground up. It was incredible. to kind of jump in to this story that we'd kind of been creating through conversations for a while, but to then have it like very physically exist within the game and be something you could play was just mind blowing. It was really, really cool.
Nice. Does that group continue to be kind of pop positive and non-toxic?
Yeah, very positive and non-toxic for the game as well, because we talked about last time, like the people who were there had to work hard to find it. So it's a little bit of a troll repellent. Mm-hmm. It's been a great community, albeit a small one. Mm-hmm. And anyone who feels like rolling up an undead or spirit form or what have you superhero can join the Graveyard Shift and have some fun with us.
Are there what shard are you on?
I am on Everlasting.
Okay.
Yep.
Just want to make sure people don't roll up with a.
Oh yeah. I spent 90 hours leveling this to 50. Can I play with you guys?
I think you are allowed
to port characters. Yeah, I think you are allowed to port characters between shards.
Oh, that's good.
Pretty generously. So.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. You know, no one's paying for this anymore.
Right.
Which is nuts that it's just a passion project that has lived for so long and in such a high quality form.
Yeah, and also like within the notice of the original creators.
Yeah. It's also it's very interesting to because I've never done something from mostly this like role play perspective before. As my character has leveled up, I found myself making like choices on powers and stuff that are very diegetic. So like in this group mission, I was kind of underleveled for it, which fit the story of kind of I was this random person that had joined the group a little bit kind of just through random chance, happenstance, and was not really sure if they wanted to be a part of all this adventuring, or if they were just looking for like a safe haven, really.
Yeah.
And I just got knocked down and knocked down and knocked down constantly throughout this thing. And people were picking me back up and cheering me on and everything, really pulling me through. Yeah. And at the end of it, kind of just conversation around like that was terrible. Like this hearing thing is everything I was afraid it would be, but like I get it, you know? And then the next time I leveled up, I had the option to take a power that can res others. Mm-hmm. I was like, how perfect is that? Like, okay, not planned on anything like that, but it just fit. And it kind of imbued everything in the mechanic numbers, you know, crunchy piece of the game with that much more meaning. Yeah.
Nice.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I
forget. Remind me of the name of your son's character, the one that you helped him make.
Oh yeah, Spike Man. Has been on the back burner.
Okay, he's been biding his time.
Yes, I've gotten deep into the base editor, so you can like create this amazing Batcave style base. Mm-hmm. And they gave kind of people who were interested a room within it, and then I started feeling really embarrassed because my room was still just the box, you know. Mm-hmm. The 2x3 area, and everyone else had done amazing decorations. So I spent more time than I care to admit figuring out how to decorate. And that is a very deep system.
Yeah.
That is, it's kind of kludgy, but you can do what you want. So I wanted a spiral staircase, but there weren't any spiral staircases in the item list. And so I had to figure out how to like create one by merging pieces together and figuring out how to do their arcane kind of rotation shortcuts and everything like that, and kind of abusing it to get it all set up the way I wanted.
It just takes you to Blender.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, pretty much. Yeah, but I mean, I did it and I was super happy with it. So fun stuff.
Awesome. What else?
Yeah, that's me in terms of what I've been playing. Like I mentioned, I have been kind of helping design/just outright designing some tabletop/card games, but I think that's probably better for the end.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Ben, how about you?
All right. I got two things. I continue to play Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Continues to be a pretty good game. Pretty okay game. A pretty good time killer, I guess. I don't know. It's an open world game that's kind of fun to play.
You know, given this or not existing, I think I'd choose this.
it's not doing anything groundbreaking. There's nothing like that innovative in it or anything. Yeah.
It's a doing things.
So
box.
Like, yeah, the Jonathan Blow influence in me says like this game's garbage, but he says that about a lot of games.
Right,
so, you know.
Right.
But I'm having fun with it, so I enjoy playing it. I don't know if I'll see it through or not, but the story's not bad. Mm-hmm. I kind of hit a turning point in the last week of playing. The world's kind of opened up, so I think I'm level 16 now. The total level is like 50, I think, but I can kind of access maybe a quarter of the world or so safely. And then some of the new mechanics of the game has opened up that I'm going to not reveal what they are because I think they're kind of fun to see on your own and kind of be surprised by. Mm-hmm. There's some cool decisions that they do in this, similar to the board game Seafall, which was a game that I really liked, even though it like tanked halfway through the playing of it. It's like a legacy game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, even though it takes place in Greece, the pirate elements are pretty fun of it. I don't know. Not much has changed though in the past week, though. It still continues to be a fun open world game.
Yeah.
Any questions about that?
I would like to, you know, just, you know, we talk about open world games. That is such a wide definition that it's functionally becoming less useful. If it didn't get, you know, useless long ago. I want to take games like Assassin's Creed and rebrand them as doing things boxes. it's a box that you sit down in front of and do things.
It's it's like a chore giver kind of. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I just want to workshop it.
Yeah, I mean, what makes it feel less like chores is they have a good level up system kind of paired with it. Mm-hmm. They have a similar style as like Batman type games or whatever, Shadow of Mordor type games or whatever, where it's like each upgrade unlocks like a new ability that your character can do.
Yeah.
But the difference is that I actually want to unlock all of the things that they provide. Whereas like normally I dog on that type of upgrade system because you find all the fun things in the first third of upgrading, and then the rest of the stuff is you don't really care about, and then that's what you're upgrading. So usually I hate that system. But this one's, they've improved upon that. So like, not only do they kind of gate it where like there's kind of tiered powers that are unlocked, like 16 opens up like the second highest tier of like abilities that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
But even within the abilities, they have like some of them have like three levels to it. So there's like improved abilities. And then there's like three different tracks, kind of similar to like Borderlands, how it's kind of like three different paths for how you can kind of level up your character, or three different like strategies. I think I mentioned this before. There's like Assassin, which is like stealth based fighting, which is just smash people in the face style. And then the other one's Hunting, which is like shoot people from far away with an arrow. So it's kind of like a mix between the two. Yeah, there's just like fun pathways within all those trees that like within the fighting one, you can do like fire attacks where you light your weapons on fire and you deal fire damage to people. And that looks pretty satisfying. With the hunter ones, one of the abilities that they unlocked in the 16 one is you shoot a person and it causes an explosion by them that knocks everyone down around them. So that seems fun. I don't know. It's just the upgrade system seems kind of fun. So that kind of makes it feel like less of a, oh God, I'm just doing chores here to progress the plot and blah, blah, blah. So
it feels like it does a good job of adhering to like the new verbs rule.
That
if you're going to get an upgrade, you should get new verbs, not new numbers.
Well, I don't know if I agree with that or not completely, but I think it does both. So you get new things and then you get upgraded versions of the new things.
Yeah.
But I think both are good. Anyway,
other question. It's about the story, but it's pretty general. You say you're enjoying the story. Do they continue being judicious about how much they use the "you are in the real world interacting with the Animus"?
Oh yeah. Part? So I had a thought of playing this when I was like, I was playing it. And I was like, man, this is great. I haven't gone back into the real world since the beginning of the game. This is amazing.
Okay.
And then like not far after that, I went back into the real world. But then like, I think, so you opens up, you have a dialogue quest and like someone asks you like, how are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. And one of the options is like, all right, I'm ready to go back in. So like,
nice.
You can just cut out the entire real world part and just stay in the Animus the entire time. And
it's very self-aware.
Yeah. So, I mean, I walked around a little bit and it feels weird saying in the real world when I'm still playing a video game, but I walked around in the video game real world for a little bit, saw kind of all that there is to see for now. And then just went back into the Animus. So I think they're doing the right thing there where it's like, all right, we still have to have this like real world plot, but we're going to let them have a fun time exploring the game and playing the game. So
that's good.
Yeah. So I think they're doing the right thing there where it's like 95% in the Animus and then 5% outside of it. I think that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And then I'm starting to see, the like how they're going about like I feel like we've mentioned this before, there's a bunch of screenshots of the game that are just like off the fucking rails where it's like, okay, this is not a realistic game, like you're fighting unicorns that are on fire or something like that, you know. I'm starting to see where that's coming up now, or like why, you know, they try and have a rationalization for that, not just like a just a quirky aside like in a Saints Row game, but it's good. It's cool. It's a very daunting game. Cause I think I've already put like maybe 20 hours into it or so, maybe a little bit more. And I still feel that I'm only like maybe a third of the way through it or so. So
nice.
It's got some beef on it, but yeah, anyway,
clam. It's grease.
Any other questions about that game before I talk about my other game?
No.
Mm-mm.
All right, the second game that I got is one that I picked up on the Steam sale. It's an older game, but it's Grim Dawn. Have you guys heard of this game?
No.
It's kind of like a Diablo game. One of my friends has played it. It was on sale for like way off, it was like $7.50. And then I found out that I had a $5 rebate on Steam for some reason. I think like the Chinese New Year's thing from whatever that was ago. So I only paid $2.50 for it, so I'm happy about that. But it's kind of like a Diablo type game, even though I haven't played Diablo. I'm just taking other people's word on this. where it's kind of like a top-down game. It's multiplayer. It's, you know, random quests that are, you know, go kill these rats in the basement type quest, or, you know, like go, you know, go to this area with an infection and kill the source of the infection type thing. It's at least at the outset, that's the type of quest that you're dealing with, but it's multiplayer. You level up pretty quickly and the leveling up system is kind of interesting. I think other games have done this before. But every time you level up, you get 3 points and you can invest those points in unlocking and upgrading abilities. So like each ability might have like 16 levels to it. So like kind of what you were mentioning before, this, it just gives you kind of a new number for the ability. Like instead of doing 100% damage, you do 105% damage. Yeah. But to unlock an ability, you need to have a certain number of points invested in your class, whatever your class is. So with this game, I picked, it's like, I think the occultist race. So it's kind of like does plague stuff and he can summon a bird and stuff like that. So when you get your 3 points, you can either say, okay, I'm going to invest in occultist points so I can start unlocking these like level 5 or level 10 abilities, or I can just invest in this one ability that's already unlocked and make it pretty sweet. So I can start one. Yeah. So that's kind of a fun, upgrade system that I hadn't seen before. I don't think it's the first of its kind, but that's the first time I've played it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of fun to figure out like, okay, should I just do straight investing in this class points and try and rush to this like really sweet level 20 skill? Or should I just kind of like slowly build up my skills and I don't know, be boring, I guess. I don't know. So right now I'm trying to invest in just one type of skill and then try and invest like up as I go. So I'm trying to do both, I guess. Yeah. But the one that I invested in was just like you can summon a raven and it kills people. I don't know. It's a weird game. It's like you're not really there for the story. You're there just kind of kill things with friends and level up your character and kill things better.
So
one of my buddies has already played through the game and I think he's played through 5 or 6 of these 6 classes. So I'm just going to try and lure some of my other friends into playing this game as a replacement for Risk of Rain 2 or Rocket League.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the goal.
Oh, I gotta get back to Risk of Rain now that they did the update.
Yeah, they did the patch. It's fine. The new I don't know if I talked about it or not. The new class is like not that great, I guess. I played it once or twice and it was like, this is fine, but I'm going to play the other classes instead. They did try and tweak, I think, the Artificer class, where it has like a floating jump ability to try and kind of beef it up or make it better, since that was kind of a weaker class, I think. But the item drops that they have in the new version seem to continue to help like the engineer. So that seems to be the best, one of the better classes. So I don't know. I haven't played that in a while and I'm kind of like want to wait before I play it again. Like I want to wait for more updates.
It's the weird, you know, join an alpha syndrome where it's like, okay, I can't wait to try this again in 2 years when it's a completely different game.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
For Grim Dawn, is it very oriented to multiplayer, or is it something you can solo fairly easily?
So the one thing that's probably not well suited for multiplayer is, I think this is the same problem in like Divinity Original Sin 2, is like whenever I'm talking to the person giving me the quests, the other people playing don't hear that, you know?
Oh, geez.
So it's fine with me playing with the other person since he's already beat the game a handful of times. But if we were doing like a party of three or four people who haven't, and you know, three of which haven't played it before, then it would kind of be a little bit rough.
Yeah.
I guess you just have to kind of like puppet and summarize what the mission is. Mm-hmm. But then again, like the story is like, doesn't seem that crazy deep or anything. So I don't know if you're really there for that. So
yeah,
whatever. yeah. Huh. Anyway, cool. Any other questions about Grim Dawn?
This is more of a comment. I was just looking at the Wikipedia page and they mentioned that like one of the races involved is the Chthonians. And I was like, wait, is this Lovecraft? No. They're just using Chthonian as like, in like a generic sense, as in something from the underworld. But this being vaguely Victorian, I would not put it beyond them to include Lovecraft stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they have an occultist.
Yeah.
Vaguely Victorian.
Yeah. It's a weird shampoo. Vaguely Victorian. Oh, man. Huh. I don't know that I have any other questions, though.
Cool.
I had never heard of that game.
I'm just planning on continuing to play those two games, and we'll see if they improve or stay the same quality.
Cool.
So. Sweet.
Yeah. And was that all for you, Ben?
Yep.
For me, I done fell down. So I finished Final Fantasy Adventure. That is the Game Boy game that the original Game Boy game that is actually the first entry in the Mana series. So the prequel to Secret of Mana, etc. Again, as part of the collection of Mana, title that was released on the Switch. Finished that up. Continues to be a good and fun game, but what I would say for anybody who, you know, maybe, you know, already embarked to get that collection, either because of Trials of Mana, again, which was never released in the United States before, or, you know, for Secret of Mana for a, to play for nostalgia purposes. Something that is incredibly old school about this game, in a bad way, not like in a, you know, Hot Topic kind of I like it old school with a picture of an NES controller kind of way. Something that is very antiquated about this game is the reliance on purchasable keys. So you will get most of the way into a dungeon and you will just have run out of keys, and the only way to move forward is to go back out and then go to a town and then just stock up on keys, on multi-use keys. And that is,
at least it's better than like being like, here, buy these keys for real money in the middle of the game.
True. Yeah, that would be a real bummer of a thing. It's like, oh man, like I remember, like this totally just used to be a thing. Like you could buy single use keys for like the original Zelda. So that is kind of the sticking point, but like it continues being like, you know, I went a little ways into Secret of Mana, which is a game that I like just fine, but doesn't necessarily hold that fond or warm of a place in my heart, you know? Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think that I feel the most for Final Fantasy Adventure. So I may be putting this down for a little bit before I go back into the others. I'm genuinely curious to play Trials of Mana because I'd never played that. I know it's existed in, you know, a hacked ROM and in a fan translation before, but I'm probably a little bit low on energy for that kind of game right now, having just sunk 15 hours into this Final Fantasy Adventure game, you know.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, but yeah, it's neat to go back and play an original Game Boy game and to see that it still is, you know, has cool and good ideas in it.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah. So that's kind of the main thing. I have not played enough of my next thing to give a real sense. However, I will give a bit of a preview. I picked up on the Switch, I searched for it on a lark thinking it'd be, I would like to play it there. Graveyard Keeper.
Okay.
Which is a horror themed Stardew Valley with a more firm quest structure. You are a person who dies in the real world and wakes up in this medieval village, and you are appointed as the new graveyard keeper, and you have to tend to the graveyards and keep it nice, and also like plant your little gardens and set up your own little economy there, and then solve quests and figure out how to get back to the real world. So it's been long enough since I played Stardew Valley that I'm like wicked hungry for this. But I've not necessarily played enough of this to feel like I can speak to more than just the broad concept of it.
The opening death, at least from the announcement trailer, is surprisingly grisly. There is a lot of blood splatter.
Uh-huh. it's a pretty grim game, you know. It's, you know, funny too. So, you know, it's grim, but it's like somebody sends you, you know, let's say there's a donkey that comes by with a corpse wagon every couple of days, and you got to take the corpse and you got to figure out how to inter it. One thing that I think is funny is the donkey talks, and he's talking about how he's being exploited by his boss. Like, oh yeah, that capitalist pig. Yeah, just I know he's making more money than he's paid. I get paid 5 carats a day. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
So you just have this communist donkey coming by. You know.
So what you're saying is that it is more grim Fandango than grim.
Kinda. Yeah. I would say. However, you take that in, and like one of your quests is like somebody your little assistant who's a disembodied skull says like, hey, you can cut away some of that meat and sell it to the villagers. You know,
oh boy.
Yeah. So I think you're laundering human flesh, is what it seems like, but
oh,
I don't know.
An upgrade tree in a video, and you could make shoes of flesh. Mm-hmm. Oh no.
So yeah, it's, you know, it's a horror themed Stardew Valley, you know, which is right up my alley.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'll have more to say about that next time. I was curious about it on PC, but I know me, and I know that like the best way for me to settle in with that is going to be on the couch as opposed to, you know, hunkered over a computer. So
man, I'm feeling the gravity of owning a Switch.
Yeah,
like, I don't yet, and it's starting to feel inevitable.
It's a really good system. I like mine quite a bit, and I know that with you liking the Vita as much as you do, it absolutely is the heir apparent to that.
Yep. Yeah. You that's exactly my thought is, especially if I have a heavy travel season come up in the near future, we'll see.
Yeah. Not for me to say, you know, it's worth the 250 or 300 or whatever it is, but I greatly enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
plus you can rationalize it and say you're buying it for your kids.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
It's a family gift. It's a family gift that only dad gets to use.
I'll try that line and let you guys know how it goes over.
Okay.
For a graveyard keeper, I'm wondering like if they started making a game like Stardew Valley and then Stardew Valley came out and they're just like, all right, we got to reskin this.
I don't know.
Let's go as far away from cute as we can.
Yeah, not sure. Don't know. I also picked up there's an expansion called Breaking Dead I'm curious about. I just picked it up because the game itself was $20 and the expansion was $5, and I was like, might as well just have it all, you know, at the start. So more to report later. I try not to do that, but I know I'm going to be playing it, so you know, giving you some previews.
How much is this game?
$20.
All right. Yeah, it seems sweet.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's everything that I have. How do you guys feel about going into the multiplayer?
Let's do that.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. My fault here. Put out the multiplayer question a little bit late. So we don't have very many, but I've got a few. I've got some free plays we can do after this. Just cool. A couple. The question that I have here that I asked the nice
also,
people
I'm not going to let you take that bullet. You say that as if it was always the plan for you to put it up. Cole covered for me. So.
No, don't worry. It's
your fault that the multiplayer exists today.
Yeah. No, it doesn't matter whose fault it is. Yeah. The question that I ask the nice people is, what game or kind of game do you most associate with summertime? Those long days without school or with friends over or trapped inside by the heat? I don't know, thinking about summertime quite a bit. It's a pretty American-centric question, but we've got at least one international prompt. So, Dennis, what does Mike say?
Mike says, for me, summertime means going to my friend's place with the Slurpee and some candy, spending the whole day in her basement playing Super Mario 3. I can't even guess how many hours we spent stockpiling fire flowers and leaves for minigames or maxing out lives in that coin heaven level in World 7. It actually feels wrong to play it unless it's boiling hot outside.
Nice.
Nice.
It is a really summery game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even the ice level doesn't feel like it's fully committed to it.
Yeah. it's too close for me not to jump in with my answer here off the top. So your summer game is Super Mario 3. Mine is Super Mario Land 3, which is Wario Land.
Oh, dang. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. So it was the first summer that we had a Game Boy. It was one of our favorite games for it. And I have a distinct memory of driving home in the dark, windows open because it was hot outside, and playing Wario Land by the light of passing streetlights. So you'd go a couple inches, wait.
Yeah.
Just hope you weren't in range of a baddie when the darkness hit.
That is a good challenge mode. You can approximate that by sitting in a dark room and having somebody turn a light. Just use a dimmer to turn the light up and down. Yeah.
I was going to say, it sounds like a Nintendo mechanic already where they just black out the level and then turn lights back on.
Yep. Yeah, right.
Yeah. I mean, if I recall correctly, that's one of the ones where you can't die, too. Or was that the one where you could at the start?
No, they have a weird... You can become small. It's been so long since I've played it, but I don't think you can actually die.
Yeah, I just that is a series that I know there are some that do both, but I don't have like an encyclopedic knowledge of it. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know that at least Wario Land 2, you don't so much die as you just get a power down. That's a setback, but sometimes you need those to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, so I get to jump in with some foreign experience. Ireland tends to have warm summers that often feature a lot of rain. And for me, the game I most associate with summers of my youth are the hours I put into Lemmings on the Amiga. This ad will help you guys understand. Also, that song still slaps.
So I have not looked at this yet. If we all want to take a moment to listen to it, I can edit in the song at the very least.
It is 30 seconds long. I like the Simpsons references in it.
Yeah, no, they're doing a really they're trying very hard to make Bart versus the Space Mutants seem like a desirable video game.
Overactor.
So this this is kind of strange because I have very fond memories of the Amiga 500 as well. There's a neighbor, a friend of mine, lived at the end of my street. Whose dad had this Amiga 500 laying around. I think that's what they had in lieu of an actual computer for a very long time. And just had like bootlegged Amiga games, including like early Sierra games, like, you know, Police Quest and Leisure Suit Larry, and stuff like that. I don't think we had the Lemmings game, but yeah, no, just seeing that hardware, I was like, yes, nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Greg writes, Final Fantasy came out for the NES in the summer of 1990, and I was hooked on the game as a 14-year-old for 3 weeks straight until I beat it. To this day, when I think of that summer, an important one in other ways, such as going on my first date and preparing for high school as a freshman, I still think of it as the Final Fantasy summer.
Nice.
Yeah. So, real similar. I can just say this. This is mine. I've got a few of these, like the time I basically mainlined Wild Arms 2 because it was on a rental. for one of these, the idea being 14 years old and getting ready to go into high school, is this unlocked that. Man, just spending just whole nights playing EverQuest, like playing EverQuest with my guild until the sun came up, and then going to sleep and waking up at 2 p.m., getting the chores done before my parents got home, and then just repeating it the next, you know, the next day. Like, I wasted that whole summer doing that.
Wait, waste is the wrong word there.
I know. I spent a lot of time doing that. You know, it was a pretty big investment. And I normally associate the summertime with these big RPGs because, you know, you're not in school, so you had the time to dedicate to them, and you can just play them, you know, play it whenever you want, etc. At least I could. But yeah, EverQuest is the one that is like, that was a summer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
So be thankful that you escaped only committing a summer to it.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, I played a little bit more after that, but, you know, well, whatever. let's see. Dennis, what does Steven say?
Steven says, Final Fantasy 2, or 4, spent a really hot week renting it from a store and finally finishing it.
Hmm. Similar story.
Good stuff.
I was pretty young when I did that, though. Yeah. Hmm. Ben, what does Lindsay say?
Lindsay says, even though I do not play this game anymore, I would say the game of life on PS1. My friend and I played this every time we were together. We played our last game of it a couple of days before taking his life. Perfect game to play with a friend, especially in the summer.
Hmm. Wow. That's pretty heavy. I'm very sorry about that. If that means what I think it means.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have nothing more to add. I never played that adaptation, but there always seemed to, like, the PlayStation generation was always weird for having those kinds of adaptations that were like shipped in a box, you know, as opposed to being, you know, downloadware, you know, like you wouldn't get a physical product of the game of life, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, on a shelf like that. And then finally here, Michael says, this summer I am putting some time into Bloodborne, going for the platinum. If I'm on the go, I bring my GBA SP, and I've been playing Fire Emblem when I get a chance. I had the game since it came out as a kid.
That's nice. I like the idea of this one game that you've been working your way through. Was that movie Boyhood? This is like the video game equivalent.
Did you just play it, playing a couple of levels every summer for 18 years?
Yep. Yep. Yep.
Oh, man. Let's see here. Ben, you have not provided your answer.
Yeah. I think I'm going to say Medal of Honor Allied Assault for a similar reason for you for EverQuest. That was a game where over the summer you could gradually play it later and later and later. And eventually you get to the point where you're playing it till 6 or 7 in the morning. Then you go to sleep. And I think then you do this long enough that eventually you either stay up all night one night and your schedule flips back to normal again,
yeah,
or something like that happens to recalibrate.
It's a little bit like breaking jet lag.
Yeah. I remember the absolute worst case was I fell asleep at some point and then I woke up at 6 p.m. and then immediately drove to meet up with my friends to eat hot wings, because we would do that every, I think, Wednesday or something in high school.
Hot wings for breakfast.
Yeah. Like, this is a bizarre experience. Yeah.
Nice. Let's do a couple of archived free play multiplayer questions. I haven't compiled the most recent ones, so these are from late last year. Jonathan writes, the Fallout.
I was gonna say, the pressure is on with these because we have not seen we do not remember these. So yes. These are like off the cuff answers.
Yes. the Fallouts have a bunch of gangs based on 50s cultures, plus knights Romans, and Mongols. If the timeline of the game changed and today's culture was what Fallout was based on, what groups would form in the apocalypse? I'm in kind of just a really like bummed out mood about the world right now. So I would say it's all Proud Boys. It's all the Proud Boys. Sorry to bum you out, but that's what I feel like.
So the Scientologists.
Oh yeah.
I want to choose to like think of this like the Warriors and have it be a really fun version of things.
It's funny, I thought about the Warriors too.
Huh?
I thought about the Warriors too.
Yeah, I would like maybe if there's a way to make jovial crotch grabbers and not think of the reality of it, I think that could be fun. But I don't know.
Yeah.
It makes me sad too.
Be the CrossFitters.
Ooh, yeah.
Ooh, okay.
And I'll have barbells like welded to them in different ways.
Just extreme body mods.
Sank into my arms when I was lifting their during the apocalypse.
Yep.
Their weapons are tires that they just roll at you.
just big, big ropes that they use.
Oh, they'd be like super anti Nuka Cola. Oh, this is perfect.
Ooh, I don't know what that. What that.
Oh, the head guy at CrossFit has this vendetta against. He's like, you know, sugar and pop is the devil.
Gotcha. Okay, that's not. I mean, the devil's probably strong, but that's probably a sensible.
It comes from a reasonable place.
Yeah. I like this one. This is fun. Adam writes, pick an object to your left. Pitch a video game around that object.
To the left of me is our liquor cabinet.
Mm.
I don't think I have to work too hard on that one. I'm instantly reminded of the bartending sim where you actually poured drinks using the Wii remotes.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Grab the right, it was like a live installation, but that's a super cool idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah. So it is a Stardew Valley for a distillery.
Oh yeah. Good. Go out and source the wood for your barrels and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
To my left is Surely You're Joking, Mr. Feynman, which is a book. And I've only got through the first chapter, but I would make a video game based on making your own like physics, like science laboratory in your bedroom, and then trying to figure out fun solutions to things with it.
That sounds like a good VR game.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sounds like it needs to be in the same universe as Sir, You Are Being Hunted.
Let's see here. To my left, I'm not gonna hit it because my cat hates the sound of it. But I've got some canned air. I've got some compressed air, dust off. Let's see here. Do I want to go wholesome? Yeah. No, I don't want to go wholesome with it. Using the compressed air to administer whippets to yourself to phase into a different reality while you are high and your brain is going wah 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 in order to solve problems.
There's a current version of the game called the like Story of Life or whatever, where you go on like different levels of scale or whatever. Uh-huh. You could do this with like different levels of highness.
Yeah. I say that like I have experience with it, but I've never actually. I've always been afraid of doing that because it seemed dumb. Like, why would I want to feel miserable for several hours just to feel good for right. 2 minutes? But like, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's maybe because I've been playing Psychonauts, and the original concept for that was somebody who did peyote to venture into their own mind to get through a thing. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
It's a good one.
Yeah. Let's see here. Final one here is not really video game related, but I like the free play ones when they're not necessarily. Would you rather be a vampire or a werewolf, and why? There's a caveat here, and no shape shifting into a wolf whenever you want, and reverse vampires don't count.
Oh man!
Yeah, so that was asked by Christopher if I didn't say it. So you are a werewolf that moves solely by the moon, and you are a vampire that adheres to the majority of the rules. So, you know, at least the basic ones, you know, react negatively to the sun, etc.
That's pretty tough.
Yeah.
I'm in Seattle, so vampire might be okay here since there's never sun out. But I don't know. I think I would do werewolf and then figure out a way to just be contained safely for a day somewhere, like a panic room or something. And then that way you'd still have like the majority of your time, you can do whatever you want to do.
See, that's the thing, right? Like, I feel like with the vampire, you have the kind of the highest, you have the highest, you have the ability to not kill somebody accidentally.
Yeah,
right?
This is true. You could do like a Dexter vampire kind of thing.
Oh, okay. But so the problem is, if you are a vampire who cannot be a reverse vampire, then you can't necessarily live the kind of, you know, you can't live a normal life.
What is it? Clue me into how you're thinking of reverse vampire.
You can go out during the day and you have to be in during the night. It's a Simpsons joke.
Ah, I see. Yeah.
You know, and I like sunny days, you know, and I, you know, like holding to a schedule. I don't know that I would want to get rid of that. So I think that the upsides of being a vampire are very, very good. The downsides of being a vampire are very, very bad. A werewolf, you can mostly live a normal life, but every month you just go to a cabin and, you know.
Yeah.
Middle
yeah.
of the woods. Yeah. And then control the deer population of that area.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't mean to like lay out all of the reasoning and take it away from you. Was that yours, Ben? You wanted to, you would go with werewolf?
Yeah. You have less than 28 days to find your panic room. So that part's
I think it is also, now I start thinking about all of the rules around mirrors and garlics and being invited in. That stuff is not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. So werewolves.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And werewolves. To steal the New Zealand movie that's coming out. That's going to be the sequel to What We Do in the Shadows.
I'm so excited. It's going to be so good. It's been forever since I've seen What We Do in the Shadows. I need to watch that again. Yeah. So just a bunch of werewolves. You know, I have to admit that pains me a little bit because I think werewolves are far lamer than vampires are. But at least werewolves are predictable. You know,
there's no upside with werewolves, right?
I mean, what I am assuming is just a complete effacing of the of your personality of your ego. You know, so you know the version that Chris lays out here, you know, no shape shifting into a wolf whenever you want. Like, if you have the ability to just like become an ultra strong wolf man at will, that would be a big upside, I think. You know. However, no, I don't think you actually get like a strong benefit in your waking life.
Yeah. I mean, you got a cool thing to talk about at parties.
Maybe, but then people want to see it
though.
Yeah.
Depends on whether or not it's a full moon or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is true.
Yep. So yeah, thank you everybody. If you would like to participate in the multiplayer, Dennis, so you gave your answer.
Yes.
Okay, cool. Sorry, I wanted to make sure I didn't forget you.
Mine was Wario Land right off the top, so yes. I went a bit out of order.
Yeah. Cool. So thank you. If you would like to participate in the multiplayer, look on Monday afternoons at our Facebook page, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things in games that are, you know, exciting for us. Dennis, what have you got?
Yeah, so I'll do a quick one just because I feel obligated to mention Warframe since there's been so much news around it. But as part of all the new stuff coming out for Warframe, they are offering to send someone into space. So all you have to do is play the game to enter, and the winner, they will contribute $250,000 towards sending the winner into space, which makes me realize that might not be enough to get into space, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe by the time you know, all the promotion ends, they'll have the cost down. Yeah, so that is a thing that is happening, and there's a ton of new stuff in Warframe that other people are better equipped to talk about than I.
Yeah. My question, you get to accept being sent. They don't just send you into space.
You know, they don't specify, and that makes me worried.
Okay.
man, how would you like to be that person getting the call and be like, congratulations, you have a trip into space. How do you feel? And you're just like, nah.
You just wake up on the launch pad. Stop.
Oh, it could, that'd be nice for the next guy in line, though.
I suppose.
Craziness. Yeah. So the thing that I'll talk about that I am most excited about has been some personal projects that I've been working on. I think I talked on the show before about how I've got a friend designing a kind of tabletop RPG that's meant for one player. So think like a Gloomhaven-ish kind of game, but you know, run by one person. And I've gotten to jump in and spend time working with him on that. That's been a ton of fun. But on vacation, I think just the creative juices were flowing from working on that. I had an idea for a card game that is a little bit of the same concept. So it plays like a Hearthstone or a Magic the Gathering kind of game. So collectible card game or, you know, a deck building game, essentially. But it runs with one player. And so I actually wrote out the rules for it over vacation, created an initial deck list for a 52-card kind of play test, and I've got it out to several people right now, some people in the DuckFeed network, actually, to play test it. I've got it to a place where I feel like from playing it myself, I'm happy with where it's at, or at least I'm happy enough to share it with some other people, and nice. I've been doing that. If you guys are interested to check it out or two, if anyone listening is interested to check it out, get at me on the Slack, and I'll link you into the rules.
Yeah.
So the concept of this game, is that it is kind of this kind of versus Hearthstone style game, but it is solitaire and you are playing from one deck. So whenever you draw a card, the top side of the card is a, you know, player side, and the bottom side is a villain side. And depending on whose turn it is, it either goes to the villain or the player. You know, the player kind of builds their hand and plays minions and makes decisions like in a normal game of this sort. The villain cards are all balanced to be played immediately and take effect immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of them will be minions that stay persistent, some are spells, etc. But you know, you're trying to kind of fend off the relatively overpowered villain side with your hand, to win before you run out of health.
Yeah.
So that's like the high level concept.
That sounds sweet.
It's been a surprising amount of fun. Yeah. I was surprised at how few pages it took to write out the rules for it. I don't know if that just means that the rules are horribly incomplete or what, but the idea I have is, you know, like right now I said that it runs on like a 52 card standard deck, just with a reference for what each card means. The idea would be like you buy a starter pack that has like, you know, a base set of cards for your collection and then three or so villains. And each villain starts with a 30-ish card deck. And it's like, if you're going to play that villain, you have to use those 30 cards. But then you can add in your own cards from your collection up to, you know, X number of cards more to form the actual deck that you play with. And so you have a chance to kind of, once you know what's in the villain's deck, customize and kind of deck build around that to say, okay, well, how can I abuse some of their mechanics or what have you? In addition, you would have like a villain portrait card that you would put at the top that would give any special rules or kind of ongoing effects for playing that villain. So maybe there's one that, and now you just start making stuff up, right? Yeah, every turn they do a set amount of damage to the hero, or whenever they draw a certain type of card, something happens, or, you know, what have you, go on and on. But, you know, it would be difficult to beat them, but once you did that, you could add their cards to your collection and use those to play any of the other villain decks that you had gotten. And obviously you could expand and expand from there.
Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So tentatively calling it Deck of Wonders, just because that's literally the first thing that came to mind. It's a very, very working title. And was talking with that same friend earlier today about like some of the story idea. And I like the idea that this is like a deck of cards that you've stolen from fate herself. And by kind of stealing it, you've kind of, I think like a Harry Potter, like you've kind of uncovered this magical world living under our noses that no one really notices. But now all these denizens are kind of coming out of the woodwork and you have to kind of stay one step ahead of them, deal with them, and kind of recruit them to your side to stay one step ahead of fate. So you can tell, like, because I've been on vacation, I was able to spend pretty much a week straight thinking about it,
nice.
Designing it out. And it was a ton of fun to do. So
yeah,
I'm excited about it. And yeah, anyone who's interested to playtest, I'm very hungry for feedback.
What part of the process so far has been most surprising to you, either in its difficulty or its ease?
Yeah, I think I was very worried that the system around kind of the villain AI would be very unbalanced one way or the other. That would be hard to get a balance where it was difficult but beatable and not just crushing you every time or easy to just roll over. The goal in my head is about a 30% win rate once you kind of understand the deck that you're working with. So it should, you know, you should have to play well and get a little bit lucky to beat this a given villain, unless you're really, really smart with your deck building, kind of drawn to the right combo to break it. Mm-hmm. But the idea that I had for how to manage it is each of your minions has a priority number. And then the rule is that the villain will just attack your minions in priority order until they are either all dead or they don't have enough attack left to kill another minion, at which point they'll just attack your face with any remaining damage. However, you get to decide in what order the villain's minions attack. So the order that you are being attacked in is fixed. You decide what order the villain minions attack in. And so it's in your best interest to order the attacks to be as inefficient as possible. So let's say you have a 3 health minion and they've got a 1 attack, a 1 attack, and a 3 attack minion. Well, you know, an intelligent player might just say, well, I'll attack with the 3 attack first, clear out that 3 health minion, send the 2 ones to face. But since you get to choose the order, you could say, no, all 3 of those are going to attack the 3 health minion, and they're going to overkill it by 2.
Yeah.
But that saves damage from coming to me. And I kind of had that system in my mind. I was worried, like, this is going to be hard to balance. It's either going to steamroll the player or the player's going to steamroll it. It'll be really easy to, like, break. But I was pleasantly surprised that it was forcing really interesting choices. And I felt like I was playing strategically versus kind of seeing the answer clearly, even in the first version of it, even though that was balanced a little too far towards the villain. And within, I think, 3 iterations of it, I was feeling like, man, every time I deal out, I feel like there was probably some way for me to win if I just get a little bit lucky. And I'm there, like, really hard tactical choices coming up every turn. and that just felt really, really good. So it was surprising that I got there as fast as I did.
Yeah. Nice. Well, that sounds like it's really fulfilling.
Yeah, it was a blast. We'll see where it goes. It's purely just like it was fun. I think I joked last time, like, you know, I love reading rule books, and now I'm like reading rule books that don't exist, and now I'm writing rule books.
Yeah.
So we'll see where the hell this goes.
And pretty soon, no rules.
Yeah, exactly.
Just right. You're going to go to Outback. It's fine.
Well, this ended in a depressing place.
Did it? I don't know. It's not a great restaurant, but it's fine.
It's not a Golden Corral.
Oh man. I've got a brief story, and this is more of a, huh, they're still doing this, huh?
Yeah.
which is, for years and years and years, an independent team, a group of people have been working on a remake of the original Half-Life just titled Black Mesa. This, you know, relatively recently, as in, you know, a handful of years ago, got official sanction by Valve. Valve even put it up for sale on Steam, you know, so you can get it for like $8 or whatever now. However, it has been a work in progress. So they've been kind of doing it chapter by chapter. So after years and years, I think at like 7 or 8, maybe, like, I remember looking at this back when I first moved back to Cincinnati. So like 2011, 2012. After that many years, they are just now getting around to putting out a beta for the final chapters that take place in the alien realm of Xen, X-E-N. Just very not beloved levels, but, you know, I had put off playing this because they hadn't finished it. But yeah, they're rounding the bend with Xen. I can finally, like, I don't know, maybe start looking at playing this. So yeah, sometime here this summer, and it is likely that the final product will be out in 2019, which is ridiculous.
Just the one screenshot in this article is gorgeous and immediately evokes a game that I have not played in forever. Mm-hmm. Like I know exactly where this screenshot is from.
Yep.
I haven't played the game in God, probably 10 years plus.
Yeah. It's just a, it's just a game that I haven't thought about in a while. So yeah. Ben, you got anything?
Yeah, I never played the first Half-Life, so I'm watching a trailer for it now. I've seen people play like the last level of it, where you fight like that weird monster thing, but I don't know. So that's what this is, right? It's like the last chapters of Half-Life 1?
No. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, it looks cool. I mean, yeah.
It's a departure for the game, you know?
Yeah, I don't I don't have the frame of reference for this to be as impactful for me. The graphics look better than Half-Life by a whole bunch, but then they still look maybe not as good as current games, but they still look pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, for like a crew of all volunteers that have been rotating for the better part of a decade. Do you have a story, Ben?
Oh, yeah, I have nothing.
Okay, attaboy.
it was a light news week.
Yeah.
I will bring up the story that I shared last week since Dennis wasn't here. Dennis, they're making Gloomhaven on Steam, and it's coming, an alpha version is coming out in like a week and a half from now.
Yeah, I saw that. Super exciting. Yeah. My play group burnt out on Gloomhaven, I don't know what percent through.
Yeah.
I saw this. It seems like they're departing from the board game pretty significantly. Like I remember seeing a headline that it's they're intending it to be more like the flavor of the game than a one-to-one recreation.
I mean, I'm surprised by that. Actually, I saw a trailer and it looks like you have the same card system and it looks like a hex grid type thing.
Oh, okay. Well, I could be completely wrong on that then.
Yeah. I don't know what'll be in the alpha versus the final game, but I'm assuming that they'll do like a few of the base classes. But I don't know how much of the story they have programmed either. So
yeah, so I think that's everything. How do you guys feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this episode of the Level 291. We'll be back next week with more One Assumes. But otherwise, you know the stuff you can do. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast, patreon.com/duckfeedtv, and just plain old coming back. And if you get a chance, impose us on your friends. That'd be good. Yeah. Bad for you, good for us. So, I think that's just about everything. So I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch, on Friday and Saturday nights, twitch.tv/duckfeedtv.
I've been Dennis Furia. I stream occasionally at GreenLaser73.
And I've been Ben Merkel at MerkelB on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. Had some beer in my mouth. That's why there was that pause there. I thought it would take longer for Ben to do his thing. Who has titles?
And talk slower.
Wait, does beer on your mouth mean you were just drinking a beer?
I had taken a sip of beer. I said beer in my mouth. I don't think it's a beer on my mouth.
Sorry.
Yeah. Who has titles?
I got four for you.
Oh, wow.
Let's see. I've got Implied Axe Murder.
Okay.
I've got Doing Things Box, styled as DOINTHANGS Box.
Okay.
I've got Vaguely Victorian.
I also have Vaguely Victorian.
Yeah, that's pretty strong.
Yeah.
And then I've got, this is more just for my amusement, ATSDTH Story, which is the abbreviation for the official, they're still doing this, huh?
Okay, so
which is a sequel to your, I have to do this in real time, ATIH story, which is a thing is happening.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. Let's see here. And Ben?
I have in my head canon, I have it's not a tragic story, but annoying. I also have vaguely Victorian. And I also just wrote down, impose this on your friends.
By votes, it's vaguely Victorian.
Yeah, I like vaguely Victorian.
Cool.
It sounds like a subscription service.
It sounds like a candle.
I like it. It just there's a record label that I like called Secretly Canadian that it just reminds me of that.
I think they did an NPR Tiny Desk concert recently.
Yeah,
the name sounds very, very familiar.
Yeah, yeah. They just, you know, it's an indie record label. I wouldn't be surprised if one of their acts went on there.
Yeah.
Cool.
Very, very cool. Yeah. Good hanging out. Ben, I will drop you the link.
Yeah, that'd be sweet.
To the rules doc, and then all you need is a 52-card deck and a way to count backwards from 30 for health.
Okay.
All right.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah, cool. See, I'm seriously looking for clarity of rules, and then how do you break this? What way to break this am I not seeing?
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, you just unleashed the master on that. So
yes, that's
what I figured. Already my Excel spreadsheet.
All right.
Cool, guys. Stuff, guys. Take care.
All right. See you guys. Have a good night.
Bye.
Mm-hmm. Bye.